From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest, Timothy Oliphant, has had an unusual career for an actor in the 21st century. He's made his bones as starring in Westerns, first in HBO's Deadwood, where he played an old-fashioned lawman as modern-day immorality was taking over the West. He's currently can be seen as the star of Justified on FX, where he plays a guy with old-fashioned morals in the modern world. If you throw in The Crazies and his turn as the spirit of the West in Rango, he's kind of got the five-star covered. Thanks so much for being here, Tim.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
One of the things I like about you as an actor is that you find a way to bring comedy into really tense situations. And I wonder where that comes from for you. If there's just that, how much of that's you and how much is a way to get your way into these characters?
Well, I appreciate you noticing. First of all, I mean, you know, I don't know. I like a little comedy and with my drama. I was just kind of a fan of that. I mean, just a fan of those kinds of scenes, those kinds of performances.
Because one of my favorite things of yours is one of my favorite line readings, in fact, comes from Go. You said, there you go, and there's the family circus sitting there waiting to suck.
I didn't write that.
But you delivered it, though.
That's John August. That's, that's the job. It's just a great part. You know, that's just one of those deals where you just try not to screw it up. You know, that's your job is not to screw it up.
That's a very modest way of putting it. That sounds like something that Raylan Givens would say. You just try not to screw it up.
When things are well written, the job is rather simple and easy. You're bringing it to life, and what's beautiful about it is that it just gives you a lot of room to find whatever's not obviously apparently there. You know, to flesh it out, to say, you know, what if I look at it from this angle or that angle or that angle? And because it's so well written, it allows you to do that. The problem is when it's not well written, that's when the job gets tricky.
It almost seems like for me that period after Go became this kind of time. You sort of said, I'm going to make all these things work. You know, you're kind of working yourself up to a certain period. And you just almost like you find the comedy in irritation for these guys that you play. You know, they're slightly sort of frustrated with things.
Well, between Go and the last maybe about 3-4 years ago, I felt like I had a couple swings at some really fun stuff, and I had fun, as much fun as I could. But really, I think in a lot of ways, with few exceptions, I was just kind of getting to know it all, you know.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, finding your way around the set and understanding the role, the responsibilities, I felt like I was just learning a lot. Now I feel like I'm just having a good time.
But it seemed like, again, I haven't had a chance to see you on stage, but I'm guessing just getting a chance to do those kinds of things that
stage
you did.
Stage was fun.
Yeah, and just
stage
getting a chance.
Stage was fun.
Because I guess in a lot of ways, to me, stage and TV are kind of similar, that you get to really live with a character and figure out who and what he is.
That may be true. That may be true. I just know stage was, I've only done three things on stage outside of a night of scenes in order to try to land an agent. And each one was just a ball. And every night, it was just a great deal of fun and really accessible to have fun.
Well, you played one character in High Life, and that came from a play, right?
It did. And you can feel it when in some of the scenes in there. You feel like, you know, this could hold its own, just three walls, you know. It was a lot of fun, that part.
And by the way, it's The Treatment, I guess, is Timothy Oliphant, the modest Timothy Oliphant, who's the star of Justified on FX. But one of the things about High Life, too, again, there's a lot of comedy, and I feel like you really can find the meat in playing comedy out of things that other people might not do.
I'm looking for it. If it's not there, then you know, it's not there.
But even in The Crazies, to some extent, you kind of find a way to play the comedy in that.
If that movie's not funny, it's just going to suck. I mean,
it's kind of horrible, too, though.
Well, yeah, but... Yeah, but, you know, the great, you know, it's, and I'm not comparing the two in the terms of, but, you know, it's like David Lynch is funny. That's why I like him. He makes me laugh. My favorite artists and painters, they often make me laugh. My favorite actors make me, you know, it's like the great De Niro performances when I was growing up, you know, they make me laugh. Sid and Nancy makes me laugh. Nick Cage makes me laugh. I mean, even in the most dramatic performances, you find these, there's a bit of a joy to it all.
Yeah, I get that. But it's I just found it to be, just in watching all the stuff to get ready for this, something that seemed to be unique to you.
Well, I don't, those people I just mentioned, it's not, there's a list of them. I'm just trying to play along.
But they're not doing it, I think, as often as you do, though. I mean,
that true?
Yeah, it seems to be pretty often. I mean, you think about...
De Niro's pretty funny.
I don't know. You think Taxi Driver is funny?
What?
You think it's funny?
Is that not him talking to himself? It's a skit on Saturday Night Live, isn't it?
I mean, it is now.
Of course it is. That's because it's funny. He gets the... There's comedic timing throughout those performances, and that one in particular, right?
Yeah, I guess though.
It's not much different. It's not the same. I'm not trying to put them on the same level, but there's a very, it's similar, I believe, to what I was trying to bring to life in a movie like Go. I'm quite certain, and now obviously he does comedies a lot, but he knows he's being funny. In the middle of those, he's aware of the, I assume he's aware of the performance.
Yeah, he certainly seems to act like. I mean, he basically is talked about in the movies as if he's a legend, you know, the scary drug dealer. And you play a number of these guys who are sort of ostensibly scary, who are funny, like in the Perfect Getaway or Live Free and Die Hard.
Live Free and Die Hard wasn't as funny as it could have should have been. but sure. What are you getting at?
I'm getting at the fact that you play these guys who are these physical forces who intimidate people, mm-hmm. who seem to amuse themselves, and comedy comes out of that. And it's getting to what you're saying about that guy in Go who sort of knows he's basically this sort of legend in his own mind who, if people are going to think he's scary, he's going to like basically use that. And a number of the other characters you played in films and television have been that kind of guy too,
mm-hmm.
who use that kind of fearsome, intimidating thing and sort of wring laughs out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, from the flip side is my favorite comedic performances are they got a little edge to them. They got a little.
Who are you thinking? Like who comes to mind?
Name it. I mean, you know, from Richard Pryor up to. There's a little bit of it of like it makes you a little nervous, you know. There's an anger behind it, and I find that very attractive. I like it.
We're talking tension with Timothy Oliphant.
Well, that's where it all is, right?
Well, it should be all there.
It's all there. It's the same with the paintings and the sculptures and all of it, right?
And you sculpted for you painted for a while too, right?
I was an art student.
Yeah. What kind of stuff were you doing?
Oh, you know, I was getting a degree, so I was doing a little bit of everything. But, you know, paintings and drawings. And
I mean, were they big canvases or small pieces?
Fond of the ceramic sculpture studio.
Oh, really?
I was. But, yeah, my favorite artist, we were at dinner last night talking about, you know, like the Chris Burden. You know, he cracks me up. He tends to make me laugh, and then also there tends to obviously be there's a violence to it and a drama to it.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about with Lynch, too, that there's sort of the
David Lynch is funny, you know? He just, you know, one of my, the nicest things that happened to me professionally was I'll try to make this short. It's virtually impossible with me, but I'm going to try. I used to do the sports for a radio station here in L.A. called 103.1, Indy 103, and I did the sports every morning for like 2 years. Joe Escalante, who's bass player for the Vandals, hosted the morning show, and he and I met, and one thing led to another, and I started calling in every morning, or he'd call the house, or I'd be on location and call him from the cell, and give him read the paper, tell him what was happening in sports the day before. And he and I found it very entertaining. And after doing it for a month or two for free, he called me and said, the station wants to hire a sports reporter. And I said, "What? I don't understand. I'm doing it for free." And he said, "They don't understand why you're doing it. And they think they're going to, when you stop doing it, then they're going to be without a sports reporter. They have this guy lined up." And I said to him, "Listen, I can't promise you how long I want to keep doing this, but I enjoy it. And it reminds me of when I was in college. David Lynch used to do a comic for the...
The Angriest Dog in the World in the L.A. Reader.
Thank you, Elvis. So it was one of my favorite things. And in some small way, I feel like this is my angriest dog in the world. Calling in every morning and reading from the newspaper or ESPN.com and telling you what's happened. And he says, I say, I don't know if that makes any sense to you, Joe, but that's the deal. And Joe says to me, well, that makes sense because David Lynch is going to start doing the weather. So David Lynch does the weather every morning and I do the sports every day. Now, cut to a year later, I've been doing this forever. David's been doing it forever. I call in, I talk to Joe, the DJ, every morning live. David calls in and they've got a voicemail set up and he just leaves the weather report on the voicemail. And he only gives the weather for the moment. He doesn't give the weather for the day. So it's really of very little use. And if he's out of town, he gives the weather for where he is at the moment. So it's of very little use. I don't think they understood that when they hired him. But it's wonderful. And then at the end of it, he gives the thought of the day. Fresh cut pine. You know, he just says something, right? So one day I'm driving along and Joe, he says, coming up next, sports with Timothy Oliphant and weather with David Lynch. Yes, the David Lynch. And so when I get on the phone with Joe, I say, look, I hear you. I'm listening. Would it kill you, the Timothy Oliphant? Joe says, listen, I say that. And I say, I've never heard it. And I say, look, I understand. He's arguably the greatest director, certainly of the decade of the 80s, if not on a very short list of all time. So he says, look, oh, next time I'll say it. Well, the next day, David Lynch calls in and gives the weather. He says, you know, right now it's pale blue skies, you know, slight breeze, 65 degrees. And the thought of the day is Timothy Oliphant. The Timothy Oliphant. And see, right there, not only is that the most generous, beautiful thing that's ever happened to me professionally, but it confirms how funny the guy is.
Just in the interest of symmetry for this very short story, I have to ask, you ever got a chance to meet Lynch?
I've never met him. Never met him. I've stood a few feet from him.
You couldn't talk to him?
We've never spoke. You know, we were. I went to a screening. This is a little prior to that. I went to a screening over at L.A. County, the museum, of his film, Inland Empire. We could just talk about David Lynch, though. I mean, this guy knocks. It was one of the greatest screenings of all time. He had someone play the cello or something before the screening started, and then he read a poem. And then he said, enjoy the experience. And then 3 hours later, the movie was over, and he answered questions. Someone asked him what the movie was about. And he said, I quote, it's about a girl who's in trouble. And afterwards, I was standing next to him, but I don't know. I couldn't think of anything to say. So we've never met.
No, we'll take a break. My guess is Timothy Oliphant, the Timothy Oliphant. He's the star
you.
Of...
God bless you.
He's the star of Justified on
the
FX.
The Justified.
The Justified on the FX. It's The Treatment. More to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. We're talking to the star of Justified on FX, Timothy Oliphant. I've got to ask you about the show at some point, so let's talk about
sure.
it. One of the things that's kind of fun about this season as compared to last season is Raylan almost never wears the hat anymore.
Is that true?
Yeah. He wears it a lot less than he did before.
Well, we got a new a costume designer this year. I remember asking her about the last episode last year. I didn't have the hat on. I just didn't like the whole look. She said, well, I think it's important to start the story with the look and end the story with a certain look. But in between, you got a lot of room. So I thought, season two, I'll wear the hat the first episode, and I'll wear it the last episode, and in between, whatever.
So, in other words, you're wearing the hat a lot less.
I wear it now and again. It's a good-looking hat.
It is.
But I don't think they're aware of this, but anytime they write something about the hat, I sabotage it by not wearing the hat. Any episode that I'm not wearing the hat, oftentimes is because they wrote something about the hat. And then I purposely didn't wear it, just so they found themselves in a jam.
And
isn't that awful?
Seems okay to me. The show's doing pretty well, isn't it?
Yeah, then they come up with option B.
We should say for people who haven't seen you in the hat yet, the show, you play a U.S. Marshal who, in the beginning of the first season, has a showdown with a gun thug, a drug dealer, and basically by drawing down on him, something, again, nobody's done in the 21st century, end up being sent back to the place you grew up in Harlan, Kentucky. You tried to escape, and about the sort of the way you do your job there. And one of the great things about the show is, as an Elmore Leonard fan, how close in spirit it is, that kind of thing we were talking about at the beginning, that intersection between sort of comedy and violence is a really big part of the show.
Yeah.
And that must have been an incredibly attractive thing to you when you read the first script.
It was attractive to me before I read the script. Someone sent me an email saying they were going to do a show based on Elmore Leonard. I got excited for those very reasons. You know, one of the things, Elmore just kills me. I've always been a big fan. So I like his sense of humor, you know. I like his sense of humor. I like that it's always very much alive, and he's more poignant than you would think. Or that's not maybe the right word.
But I think you're getting it, because so much of the stuff is about loneliness.
Yes. First and foremost, he's just cool. You know, he's just, you know, if you look up cool in the dictionary, you'd think there'd be a picture of like Miles Davis and Elmore Leonard, you know. I mean, he kind of personifies it in all his work, and in person. And I met him first time, I think he was 84 or something. And this is not cool, doesn't come to mind when you meet an 84-year-old. But there he is, cool as they come.
But an 84-year-old who's determined to stay in Detroit, who won't leave.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, it's subtle, you know, but it's not just a repartee for the sake of being, you know, clever.
And we should say he likes the show so much, he's writing new vignettes. He's writing new stories for these characters.
He's a fan.
And he's not always a fan. There are basically only four things he likes: Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
Get Shorty, Out of Sight, and Justified.
Which are my thing, the things I like. So I feel there you go. Those are the things I like.
Oh, and 310 to Yuma. He likes 310 to Yuma too. The original one, not the remake a few years ago.
I haven't seen the original, so I can't.
You should see, because the character as written for Glenn Ford to play is not that dissimilar from Raylan Givens.
I think it's a performance in that movie that he's rather fond of, as I recall. He's talked to me about it, so I have to check it out. But
you were inspired enough by what Elmore has done that you came with a pretty cool grace note for one episode this season yourself, The Badger in the Bag.
I can't take full credit. I was talking to my assistant about the bag, and I wasn't pleased with what was in there. And
we set this up by saying there's a sequence where somebody's threatened with something in a bag.
Yeah. You know, my job is, other than showing up and hitting my mark and saying the lines, is basically just to ask questions. You know, I ask the same questions over and over. Well, you know, what's the scene about? What's the episode about? What's the problem? What's the conflict? What do people want? What do I want? What happens if I don't get it? In addition to that, what else could it be? You know, what are the possibilities? You know, the writers turn in an outline or come talk about an idea. And I basically have the advantage, because it didn't originate with me most often, to challenge them, to sit there and say, is there an opportunity there, you know? And so that's where stuff like putting an animal in the bag comes. You know, they had a scene where there was some guns in the bag. So it led to what else could be in the bag. That's the position I have the advantage of being in, to be able to say, what else? What else could it be? What are we trying to get at? And the last time those guys showed up, they had a varmint trap. And my assistant says, well, maybe they got a varmint. I'm like, there you go. That's good. Now I go into the art department. I say, can I get a dead varmint? It needs to work on Tuesday. And then I think, well, there's another scene later where Ava comes down with a shotgun. She could kill the varmint. All I know is they showed up on the set and the bag is moving. And they open it up and they've taken a remote control car and they put some PVC pipe on it. And as they move it around, it looks like the bag's moving. And I say, that's perfect. That's one of the things I discovered about this this job, the opportunity, is that I get to play along.
One of the things you guys are doing, that the writers of Graham Yost this season are doing, are getting to another thing that really happens in Elmore a lot. With his heroes are incredibly self-destructive guys. Mm-hmm. They have this pathology. Mm-hmm. And just when we thought that Raylan was kind of the hero, we can see him falling back into the things that basically probably led to him doing what he did in the first episode in the first place.
It's one of my favorite things. I may have said that too many times already about Elmore, but what his ability to have characters repeat certain acts and put themselves in, basically he has characters oftentimes put themselves in a very similar, if not exact, situation they were in before, only to repeat the exact same.
But generally it's criminals, and it's recidivist behavior. But for Raylan, he's a lawman who's basically doing the same thing. It's pathology. It's criminal pathology almost.
When Graham told me that, you know, in the books, Raylan was married, divorced.
And
with two kids.
Yeah.
And it was something I was really fond of in the books in terms of that. One of the things that I thought made the character special or different than the characters he seemed to be like. You know, people compare the character to like a John Wayne, Clint Eastwood. But they know those guys never were divorced with two kids being raised by some other dude.
And also for Elmore, basically there's another big difference between his cop characters, his cop heroes, and his criminal heroes. They're very similar.
Very similar, yes. And one of my, again, I'll say it again, one of my favorite things is Raylan confiding to criminals about his personal life in order to teach them some sort of badass lesson. You know, one of my favorite passages in one of, I can't remember, Pronto, Riding the Rap, is Raylan talking to a criminal who he has very little history with.
Is that the second you guys used in the episode? Was this guy with a gun who wants to, he's saying, come over here. And Raylan says, no, I'm not going to, he ends up shooting him. Is that the section?
Oh, yeah, we did use that. Yes, that's genius. Boy, we're no dummies. I know what to steal. I mean, I know what to steal. You're talking to the guy that I, within 10 minutes of meeting Elmore, asked him, like, you think you might want to write some more Raylan Givens stories? You should. I encourage you to do it. You said you liked the show. Write something. But Ray, there's this great thing where Raylan's talking to a criminal and telling him about how he went to visit his two boys, and their stepfather was calling the kid punk, and Raylan tells him, "Don't call my kid punk." He says it's short for pumpkin. Your wife calls him pumpkin. You know, the ex-wife calls him pumpkin. Raylan says, "I don't care what it's short for. You don't call my kid a punk," and he tells this criminal that if he had known him then, he would have explained to this guy that this is what a punk is, a guy who refuses to grow up and take responsibility for his life. I love that passage because you're learning so much about, Raylan's making a point about to some criminal about, you know, and he's being a tough guy. He's being John Wayne-ish, I guess. But he's talking about something where that's quite insightful to who he is. It's painful to him. Talking about some other man raising his boys, he's talking about being in a position where he's not in control, where he's lost something that's dear to him, and it's not something you would see in a Clint Eastwood movie. And it's what makes those stories so attractive to me. So,
and what we're seeing in this season, in the concluding episode is basically going to run this week, is there's been a downward spiral in this entire season for Raylan, basically in service to that thing you're talking about, this commitment to his ex-wife.
When Graham said we were going to, from the very
you're
jump.
You're talking about the creator, Graham
very,
Yost.
Graham Yost said from the very jump, we were going to have the ex-wife. She was in the shorts. She was in the pilot. It was something from the books that he held on to. I asked if we were going to have the kids. There was some trepidation about having little kids on TV. Nobody likes them. If you're going to put this ex-wife character in the story, and she's going to look like Natalie.
Natalie Z.
And she's talented as all get out. I think, well, there's an opportunity to explore something about this character that it feels in keeping with the novels. Find out. I like the idea that the marriage didn't work as much because of Raylan as because of her, and be able to explore that.
I like the kids in the short stories in the novel.
I love them.
Yeah, they play an important part. So it's interesting to see that
if the show has a life, and I have my way, kids will show up. You know, we'll just circle all the way back around to where the books were.
Well, before we go, one thing I have to talk about that's really been incredible this season is people may have seen Margot Martindale in bit parts in movies like Ghosts of Mississippi and things where she just plays basically almost an archetypal sweet Southern woman.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's probably one of the greatest performances I've seen in series television. And seeing you the way you don't quite know how to read her because she changes so quickly.
She was amazing from the jump. And then she and I got together and read that scene from the first episode together and started kind of playing with it. And, you know, it's like what we talked about when we first started this conversation. There was an opportunity there, clearly, to be both the sweetest and most charming and lovely woman and also be the most frightening and dangerous. And the beauty of, and it's in Elmore's work in these stories, is oftentimes if you turn the volume down, you can't quite tell if those two characters were inviting each other to dinner or threatening to take each other's lives.
Well, that's what I love about the show and what you do with it. And we're out of time. Please, you got to come back next season, would you?
I would love to. I appreciate you having me.
My pleasure. My guest is the Timothy Oliphant. He's the star of Justified on FX. A recording engineer at KCRW is J.C. Swadek, who mixes the show also. It is edited and produced by Gemma Dempsey. I'm Elvis Mitchell, the Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Thank you.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.